What is up, ladies and gentlemen? We are back once again with another episode of Pucking Around here on the Review and Preview Sports Network. As always, I am your host, Noah Dog Dibor, representing the Pittsburgh Penguins, who've actually been on a pretty good run lately, which has surprised me a good bit. And always, I'm joined by my co-host and friend, Brady Campbell, representing his Isles. He's not been very happy lately. It's been a bit miserable for him, but, you know, he's still going to games and all that. So, you know, Brady, besides, you know, your team struggling, how are you doing, you know, lately, and how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing pretty good. The Islanders, I feel like, have what's kind of taken me off of them a little bit, not getting as mad, was the fact that the Cowboys and Eagles got knocked out of the NFL playoffs. So I was pretty happy about that. It allowed me to not be as miserable about the Islanders, but I mean, it's a great part of the hockey season. We're gearing up for the All-Star game. But, yeah, kind of a struggle right now. I guess we're not out of it because this division and conference is crazy. But it's gotten even more crazier with, of course, your Pens and the Caps, and the Flyers are still going somehow. But, yeah, it feels like every 2 weeks, of course, things are going to change, but it's completely different every time I feel like we do a show.
Yeah, definitely. And that's, you know, kind of part of the reason we do the bi-weekly, because if you do it weekly, a lot really doesn't change, because that just means sometimes it only means you play two or three games a week. But once you do it, you know, every 2 weeks, and, you know, stuff does radically change, and stuff has radically changed in the Metro. We're going to talk about the Metro a good bit tonight. Actually, we're also going to talk a bit about the Atlantic. And then we're going to do some transactions, waiver wire, a couple of minor trades, a major trade. And then we'll obviously, as always, last but not least, we're going to do our teams of the week. Team of the week this week was very tough. There's a lot of differences between our teams. So really excited to get to that a bit later. But we're going to edit and start off with a team that has been doing really well lately, Brady. You know, the Florida Panthers, they had a streak, you know, starting about 2 weeks ago, it only ended, you know, just a couple of days ago, to where they had won 9 in a row. Now go figure, you know, like it always happens, Brady, I choose a team that's doing well and they instantly start losing. They have lost 3 in a row. Granted, their last two have been in overtime, but even with that, they have a point streak where they've acquired at least 1 point in 11 of their last 12 games. And, you know, for an Atlantic division that, you know, we've kind of discussed all year, it looked like the Bruins were going to run away with it. Panthers are now only 3 points behind them. Now, they do have an extra game played, and the Bruins are playing tonight against the Avalanche, so we'll see what happens there. Maybe the Avalanche can give the Panthers some help. But 27-13-4 record, Brady, for these Panthers. You know, Alexander Barkov does have a minor injury right now, but Sam Reinhart's been incredible. Matthew Tkachuk and Carter Verhaeghe as well, you know, kind of chipping in, and some decent goaltending from both their netminders this season. So, you know, what have been your takeaways from what the Panthers have been doing recently?
They've been on a roll, and I guess really it's not that surprising. We were kind of waiting for this. I feel like the defending Eastern Conference champs, they started off not badly, but maybe a little bit slower considering the last few years they've had. But of course, with the exception maybe the last few games, they've been really, though, on an absolute tear. And obviously, as you mentioned, two of those losses were in overtime, so they're still collecting points right behind the Bruins, who have a big game themselves tonight. And I guess it gets even bigger when now you got other teams nipping at your heels. But yeah, and they've gotten it from everywhere. Sam Reinhart, who we will talk about later, but he's been outstanding. Just he seems to find the back of the net, or at least an assist in like almost every game. Sergei Bobrovsky, especially lately, has really made a name for himself once again, maybe even throwing his name really into the Vezina conversation. Mm-hmm. He's starting to get up there in age too, but he's playing outstanding. Just missed the Stanley Cup last year. He's looking for it. Definitely, I feel like he deserves one. He's been around for a while now, and really the last few years he's been incredible for them, and they're just a really well-built team all around. The forwards, defensemen, of course, Alexander Barkov is great. They're getting contributions. Carter Verhaeghe was outstanding for them in the playoffs last year. He's having a good season. And on the back end, too, Gustav Forsling, Aaron Ekblad, they got some real good defensemen back there, both offensively, and they play well defensively. So I they're probably one of the most underrated, or you could even put them as one of the best-built teams, really, in the NHL in all areas. And it might have taken them a little bit to kind of find their stride. And of course, I wouldn't say this kind of like almost point streak they're somewhat developing here is going to last like this, obviously, for a while, but they really hit their stride at the perfect time here, mid to late January now, as we're moving through right to the All-Star break. And then after that, it's almost kind of the final stretch of the last 2.5 months, but they really couldn't have picked a better time to make a run at things and even make a case right behind the Bruins now as the top team in the Atlantic, which, as we know, is such a convoluted division.
Yeah, they've been great. They're currently, I think, it's 7 points ahead of the Red Wings, who are actually in third, but a bit of a surprising team there. And then I think Toronto's right behind them. Tampa Bay has really struggled. They're just kind of, I think they're currently in the second wild card spot, but, you know, they've not really been at the races all season. I think, Brady, you know, a team like the Panthers, you know, obviously not a very big market, you know, not a massive fan base. This is a team that, you know, when you're a small market team, the way you can compete is you just have to have really good management. I think they've made a lot of really good moves. I mean, when you look at their contracts, this isn't a team that's obviously going to go out there and spend a lot, although they do have an advantage being in Florida of, you know, no state income tax or whatever it is. That does help them with contracts a bit more, but I mean, their biggest contract currently, Brady, is Sam Bennett, who's, you know, definitely not one of their top guys at 6.35. This is a team that is not, you know, going out there and spending. They traded Huberto to the Flames season before last. They got back Matthew Tkachuk, who was brilliant last season. He's been really good this season as well. But then it's guys that, you know, aren't really superstars, but kind of fly under the radar. Carter Verhaeghe, I thought he was, you know, a pretty solid depth guy for the Lightning. And then he comes to the Panthers, and all of a sudden he's one of their top offensive producing players. Sam Reinhart's a guy I've liked for a really long time. I think he kind of flew under the radar for years because he played for the Sabres, who were always an absolute joke. But, I mean, this is a guy that, you know, when he was on the Sabres was, you know, producing 50, 60 points on teams that really didn't have a lot. And then he gets to a team that's actually decent. In the last 3 years, he's at 82 points, 67, and he's got 56 this year. He's on pace for, you know, probably a career year this season. Also leads the league in power play goals with 16 this year. And obviously of Barkov, I mean, you know, once he gets back healthy, he's really good offense. But I know a lot of people kind of question, you know, once Huberto left, what would Barkov do when he had to, you know, probably pick up some of that offensive slack? He has 46 points in 40 games this season, plus 20. Obviously, we all know this guy's remarkable defensively, you know, always in contention for the Selke every year, it seems. He went in 55% of his faceoffs. Just a really well-built team, I think, and it's not a team that you look at it and see a ton of superstars other than, you know, maybe Tkachuk and Barkov, but I think they have pretty solid secondary scoring as well. Their defense has been surprising good this season. I don't think it's a defense that you look at it and see superstars. I mean, I do like Ekblad, you know, former number one overall pick, but they're fourth in goals against this season. Their special teams is really strong as well. Power play is almost 23%. Penalty kill is above 84%. The only major question I have with them, Brady, and it, you know, kind of seems like this always rears its head in the postseason. I do love Sergei Bobrovsky. I think he had a really good run the first three rounds of the postseason last year, but the knock on him for a good portion of his career has been his postseason play. You know, Stolarz has been a good backup as well, but obviously I think Bobrovsky is going to be the main man once the playoffs come. I did pick in preseason, I did pick the Panthers to win the Atlantic, kind of, you know, my, I wouldn't say out of left field, but definitely one of my more interesting choices. So I do think it's impressive that they've kind of caught up to the Bruins. I don't think they'll pass them. I think the Bruins, you know, even though Florida's been on Run, I think that's very hard to sustain. And Boston's just been really consistently good most of the year. And obviously they have an incredible roster. And they're already up 1-0 actually on the Avalanche. I'll go ahead and check who scored that goal. But yeah, I mean, good old Pasta, of course. Who else would it be? But Yeah, I'm really impressed by the Panthers. Our good buddy Tom Zagueta is saying hello, gentlemen. What's up, Tom? He's a Rangers fan, so he's always happy, you know, during the regular season. But once it comes to postseason, it's been a little bit of a different story. But Panthers, good team, really good players, and they're a team that has to, like I said, I think it's really important for a team like that to have good management. When you're not, you know, you're not a team like Toronto, right? That's in this massive market where it's, oh, we can just give these guys $10 million contracts per year, you know, like five guys, and hopefully eventually something will happen. And I'll say this, Brady, I think it seems really weird. Maybe this is just my perception, but it feels like the Stanley Cup Finals, both Vegas and Florida, like everyone's forgotten they were in the finals last season. Like I never hear people mention, oh, Vegas are the defending champs. Oh, Florida was in the Stanley Cup Finals last season. I don't know. It's kind of weird. It feels like both teams are kind of flying under the radar, even though they're still really good. But, you know, what are your thoughts on, you know, I guess potential weaknesses for the Panthers moving forward that, you know, teams in the playoffs could potentially exploit?
Well, I think you were right about Bob. He does kind of struggle in the playoffs a little bit. Last year was definitely one of his better performances. And I guess he's a little bit up there in age. And like you said, their defense isn't – they don't really have, like, the superstar guys, but they play pretty well defensively as a team. It might be hard sometimes without maybe a superstar defensive guy. They might have some lapses on the offensive side from the point. And then I think really though, like the main issue kind of with Barkov, of course he's had his injury history, but they have kind of cycled through injuries. I feel like the last few seasons, because as good as they've been, I do feel like there's points throughout their seasons where they maybe have like a decent injury and it might lead to them not like struggling, but kind of dipping maybe a little bit in the standings. Mm-hmm. I don't really see like too many. I think they're a pretty well-constructed team. I think they're just one of those teams where they have a few fairly young players. And like, aside from their, I guess, superstar or like kind of maybe next tier down, they, like I said, they have like a lot of players with maybe some playoff experience, but even with going to the Stanley Cup final, of course, they kind of went there and it was all Vegas for the most part in that series. I just feel like they're kind of maybe a younger team. Of course, they do have some more veteran experienced guys, but I think maybe too, they could be a team that we see continues close to this success, maybe in the regular season, then kind of struggles a little bit like in the postseason without that experience and all that. But as we were saying, Detroit's the one that beat them last night in overtime. They're coming right behind them as well. So there's really no room for error for them. I think they're built pretty well right now, but if one of these kind of issues shows up at the wrong time, and we're kind of moving into the All-Star break and beyond that now, so we're really getting into that kind of long, grueling stretch of the season, the push for the playoffs in about a month or so. If they have some issues there, a big injury, or they kind of go on a little bit of like a losing streak or something like that, it could get ugly, especially in, of course, as we know, the tight division.
Here's a question for you. I was looking at their cap hit right now. The cap hit's a little bit under $85 million, so I don't know if they have a lot of room to do much. By the way, I forgot to mention the Spencer Knight thing. I think that hurt them as well. But if you're a team like the Panthers, do you think they're going to be buyers at the deadline, try to make a move? I mean, they don't have a ton that they could do, I think. But what would you do in their situation there?
I don't know if I'd be like super aggressive buying, but I think if they're kind of hovering around this point, do you know when the deadline? I know it's usually like February, March-ish.
I don't know, like the
kind of change it a little bit every year.
But, yeah, I don't know the exact date. Late March, early
March 8th, it says. Okay.
March 8th, okay.
I don't think once again, we still got like two months practically. So a lot can still change, as we know, but if they're still hovering kind of around this point near the top three spots or so of the Atlantic, I don't think they really have to make like almost like a desperate buying type of move or moves at the deadline. But I would not be surprised if they went for kind of like a middle tier type of player to maybe like shore up their bottom six, or get maybe even try though to get one of those top defensemen who can bring it maybe a little bit more offensively. They got some pretty good production out of them this season, but I wouldn't be surprised if they maybe went for that as well.
Some goal scoring updates before we move on to our next topic. The Bruins are now up 2-0, 14-22 to go in the first. Jakub Lahko scoring his first goal of the season. There's a name for you. And then the Wild up 1-0 on the Lightning. Joel Eriksson Ek with his 18th goal of the season. So more struggles for the Lightning. But speaking of struggles, Brady, Eastern Conference team that has been on the absolute skids lately. By the way, I don't know if you saw the episode title, putting the L in Elmont. I hope you appreciated that. But yeah, the Islanders, man, you know, we were just talking about them a few weeks ago being third in the Metro, kind of been, you know, in a positive sense. And lately it's just, I mean, ever since they lost that game 7-0, the Pens, it's just been absolute disaster for them. 3-6-1 in their last 10. Because, you know, the Flyers, you know, I think they're on a 4-game winning streak right now, and the Pens have been really good for like the past month or so. The Pens were in seventh in the Metro for the longest time, and now all of a sudden they're fourth, and, you know, they're like, I think they're 1 point out of a wild card, but they have games in hand. They've been playing really good hockey lately. Crosby's been going off. And then there's the Islanders, man. Now, I don't know what has happened to this team. It seems like for the last 5 years, the thing I've always, you know, said the Islanders are really good at is, you know, being defensively sound. Games I've watched them lately, I mean, their defense has been an absolute joke. Now, I do know they have injuries, and obviously I think Sorokin has really kind of stood on his head lately because he's been getting peppered every single game, and he's had a lot of bad luck as well. But, you know, not a good streak for your guys. I mean, obviously this is your team, so I'm going to let you start on this one. What have you've been seeing from the Isles lately that, you know, have been the main reasons that for this giant skid you're on?
Just, I feel like whenever they're kind of on a skid like this, it just feels like the same as the previous seasons. But yeah, we were talking about before the show that goal for Winnipeg the other night where Sorokin lost his skate blade and they had the wide open net. That has pretty much summed up the Islanders over the last month or so. But yeah, really this whole season, that I feel like the main thing in this stretch is their defense hasn't been that great all season. Of course, they've had injuries, but still – but they have somehow had the kind of offense to match it to some extent, or at least their power play was magically like good all of a sudden this season. I do feel like though this stretch, they, you know, they've gotten shut out a few times. Of course, they handed Marc-Andre Fleury the shutout in to pass Patrick Waugh for number two all time. That was
my man. That's my guy.
And then of course the losses to you guys, but then now they're only putting up like 1 to 2 goals a game at most. Not like they were lighting the lamp, but you know, their last win against Toronto on Thursday, they were down 3-1 early in the second, and they kind of rallied back to end up winning that in overtime. But they're just, that's the thing, they're so inconsistent. And A lot of fans here are calling, well, they have been calling, and myself kind of included here, for Lane Lambert to go, because he's really not helping the situation. Every game he's like throwing these random lines together. Like last game, Barzal was playing with Clutterbuck, which I don't know why. Matt Martin, oh yeah, that game against Nashville, just reminded myself. Give up the game-winning goal with like 7 seconds left. Matt Martin, that I love the fourth line, but I'm getting kind of really tired of them quickly. They're just, I feel like they're kind of too slow now for today's game, especially now that they're getting up there in age. Some bad turnovers. Scott Mayfield's contract is looking worse and worse every time he takes the ice. He cannot clear the puck for his life, and oftentimes it ends up in the back of the net. But like even today, I'll try to pull it up here. Like I saw they're benching Pierre Engvall he might be hurt now because of course, but, they're benching Mike Riley because he like took two penalties last game. Scott Mayfield takes at least one, like every game. I don't know why, but apparently a practice today, our second power play unit was Lee, Gauthier, Pajot, Bolduc, and Aho. And like, I don't know what that is. Are we expecting to score? I guess we're hoping the first power play unit scores, because that's not going to cut it. But I mean, somehow, I guess maybe not super surprising, just because that's the Eastern Conference. We're still 1 point out of a playoff spot. That being said, we're also fighting with like five other teams for the wild card, and there has been a little bit more separation between those top teams in the division. But I guess we're not out of it. We're lucky to not be out of it. But like I was saying before too, we got Chicago tomorrow. If they lose that, it's going to get ugly, especially coming back home. Their next week opponents are Dallas, Vegas, Montreal, and Florida. So they got to figure it out pretty quickly, because if this skid keeps going into next week, they could put themselves in a really tough spot for the rest of the season.
Yeah. I think when Julien Gauthier is on your second line power play, I think something is definitely wrong with your team. But I got an interesting stat for you here, Brady. So goals allowed by the Islanders the last five full seasons. Now, four of these five were with Barry Trotz, and the last one was last year when they had Lane Lambert. So 2018-19, they were first. 19-20, they were sixth. A season where they made the playoffs. And so both those seasons they made the playoffs. The second one, that was when they lost the Lightning in that game seven, which I think was 1-0. 2020-21, when they lost the Lightning again in seven, they were second. 21-22, they missed the playoffs, but they were still 10th. And then 22-23, when Lane Lambert's first year, they were fifth when they lost the Hurricanes. This season, 27th. So, you know, clearly a big drop off there. And, you know, this is a team, Brady, that I'm sure as long as you've watched, I mean, they've had good offensive players here and there, but as teams, they're really not, you know, teams that are known for lighting the lamp. They're known for being, you know, good defensively, if anything. And that's going out the window. I mean, I do love Matthew Barzal. I think Noah Dobson is a stud. I will say that he's an absolute monster. Bo Horvat's been pretty decent, but I just think there's a big fall off after that. I think Brock Nelson was really good last season. I think he's been okay this season, but I think there's been a drop off there. And really, I just think Sorokin, and both Sorokin and Varlamov actually have pretty much been standing on their heads most of the season. Varlamov, I did see a couple of days ago, was back skating, Lambert said. But I'm glad he touched on Lambert, because I was going to ask you about that, because, you know, Barry Trotz, it kind of felt like he was forced out when they lost that, or when they missed the playoffs that season. But this is a guy that, you know, took you to a conference finals, you know, game seven, you know, consistent playoff runs, you know, really good defensively, really good system, you know, a lot of, you know, solid depth pieces. They were a good team, but, you know, they let him go. They bring in this Lane Lambert guy, and, you know, last season they do make the playoffs. Granted, I think it was as the second wild card, if I remember right, and it required a massive choke by the Penguins to do it. And then this season, I mean, they're 19, 15, and 10, which, you know, hey, it's good they're getting all those points in overtime. But it also means they've lost 25 games. They're losing more games than they're winning. So, you know, what were your thoughts when they let Barry Trotz go and brought Lambert in, and obviously how it's aged since then?
Yeah, well, initially, at least they always made it sound like it was kind of a mutual parting ways. So, of course, we never really, I guess, figured out exactly what happened. But now, of course, Trotz is like the GM of the Predators. Mm-hmm. Yep. So, like, they were kind of saying, like, not really fired, but it was, I guess, let go. It was hard. Either way, like, I don't know what Barry, like, if he wanted to step away maybe for a little while or whatever. But I'm disappointed at the whole situation. Then Lane Lambert, who was an assistant coach with Trotz, obviously took the role, and I wasn't really a fan of it to begin with. Mm-hmm. As far as I know, I don't think he had any like head coaching experience. And of course he like was under Trotz, but I just had like a feeling it wouldn't be the same team. And of course the first season wasn't terrible, but there was still like kind of something missing, it felt like. And now I feel like it's rearing its ugly head the gaping hole that Trotz left. And I mean, if we got rid of Lambert, I know it might take a little bit of adjusting to like different coaches and their coaching styles, but there are a few guys out there like Bruce Boudreaux, Jay Woodcroft, those guys who, you know, have some experience. They've been around for a little bit, especially Bruce Boudreaux. And obviously, like I said, it takes some getting used to, but I know we're just getting, and I know it's kind of been one season. We had a pretty good year last year, maybe overachieved a little bit. I'm not sure, but I guess us Islander fans, we get pretty impatient, and we just want like anything at this point. I'm almost worried though, if they were to fire Lane Lambert, like Doug Huda or one of the other assistant coaches would then like replace him. And I don't know about others, but I kind of want like a fresh face, and not all the time, but I feel like especially as of late, when teams fire their head coach, we saw it with the Oilers this season, and then they kind of went on another losing streak again, but they've been pretty good since then. A lot of times teams fire their coaches and a new guy will step in and they're not really sure what will happen. And at least for the next 5 to 10 games, they're pretty good. They might even start off with a little bit of a winning streak. I'm not saying that's what's going to happen with us, but I feel like we need something to kind of like shake things up here, because clearly the message of Lane Lambert trying to provide here isn't really getting through to the team. They really on a nightly basis don't look ready whatsoever. I mean, they're playing teams half the time on the second half of their back to back. And sometimes you do see the other team maybe in the first period will come out with the stronger legs, but they like, it's not even close. And now I'm scared because Chicago's playing tonight and we play them tomorrow. So I've been saying it for the last few weeks, but I feel like this game, if this is an ugly performance, it's got to be the final nail in the coffin for this guy. I know they're still maybe kind of in it, and they got a tough stretch coming up, but like, I don't see how you can keep, it's really ugly right now. And the team just kind of looks lifeless. Even when they are winning games, they're like maybe coming back, or it's just a struggle till the end. I'm pretty sure they still don't have an empty net goal, which is, I guess watching them, it's maybe not the most surprising thing, but I mean, we're midway through January, and I know they haven't found themselves as much on the winning end, and a few of their wins have come past regulation, but that's another kind of astonishing thing. And half the time they give up the tying goal in like the final minute. But yeah, I feel like just about everything from the Trotz era here is kind of gone out the window. I mean, we maybe have a little bit more offense, which is nice, but with Trotz, I mean, for the most part, there were of course a few games here and there where things would be different, but you knew what you were going to get. It was, you know, a very tight game, a lot of on the edge of your seat, and they might not win them all, but that was kind of the way they were able to keep close games, maybe even steal a few, or at least steal a point, sneak into the playoffs. And of course, in the playoffs, Trotz's style works pretty well. Usually a lot of teams play a little bit more defensively, and it worked. But I just feel like almost everything that Trotz instilled kind of went out the window here. And I feel like for at least Lane Lambert, time is definitely running out. I don't even know, because Lou, as you know, I'm sure too, he's very quiet. So all of a sudden out of the blue, they might win a game and he could get fired, or who knows, he might keep until the end of the season. But this team, it feels weird since they're kind of still like a point out of the playoff spot, but they just feel like, it feels almost like the season's over. They feel like they have no direction.
A lot of really good points that, you know, I do want to touch on. One thing that you mentioned that I didn't mention earlier, but it's kind of been the, I think, one of the biggest worries of the Islanders the last couple of seasons is this team is really old. Like, they have a couple guys that I think are on the younger end of superstars. Dobson's 24, Barzal's 26, Sorokin's 28, which, you know, for a goaltender, that's still a pretty good age. Now, You know, he hasn't been in the NHL too long, so, you know, some people might not realize he's that old, but he is an older guy because he played in Russia for quite a bit. But, I mean, not even talking, like you mentioned Clutterbuck and Martin on the fourth line who are really old, but, you know, guys are decent pieces of their team. Anders Lee, who's your captain, is 33. Nelson's 32. Palmieri, who was, you know, killing it when you guys made those deep playoff runs, he's 32 as well. Pageot, who you traded a first-round pick for, I believe it was the year before last, he's 31. And then Ed Barzal, who is 28, but, I mean, you guys signed him to that, you know, giant extension. He's going to be mid-30s as well when that's running out. You're going to have to consider what to do with that. I mean, I don't think this is it. Like, if you were a team like the Sabres, right, or the Canadiens, to where your team is struggling, it's at least, you know, okay, I guess, in a way, because you can at least get high draft picks or whatever, and you know that, you know, your best players are probably on the younger side. With the Islanders, if they don't make the playoffs, I mean, they're screwed, man. Like, they don't have I don't see, like, any long-term future. And that's why I thought, you know, when they had that run where they lost to Lightning, and they would have won the Stanley Cup if they – because Montreal was not a Stanley Cup team that season, man. Whoever won that conference finals was going to win the Stanley Cup. It kind of felt like that was their opportunity, right? And then it didn't happen, and I think it's just kind of been downhill slowly. It wasn't like they fell off a cliff, but, I mean, maybe a bit the last month. But, you know, Barry Trotz, like you said, this is a guy that, you know, this is not a Joe Schmo. This is a guy, he won a Stanley Cup with the Capitals back in 2018, you know, giving that defensive edge to a team that was, you know, known for being good offensively, but, you know, pretty soft. He helped put him over the top. He took a team like yours, which, you know, I mean, no disrespect, but was a doormat for years. You know, consistent playoff success. Then, you know, like you said, you know, this is the mutual parting of the ways, which how mutual that is, I mean, you can never say. I know there's, you know, plenty of times we see in sports where they say it's mutual, but you can tell this guy got fired. I don't know if that was the case because I think it was just one missed playoffs season after he had multiple playoff runs. So maybe it was mutual. And like you said, he is in Nashville now in kind of a management role. But yeah, I just don't think there's any long-term identity, man. I don't really think they have any major strengths other than Sorokin. I think Sorokin's an animal. I think he's a top three goalie in the league. If Linus Ullmark didn't have that insane record last season, he probably would have won the Vezina. But other than that, you know, I just think it's downhill, man, which, you know, I don't have to tell you. Maybe you guys can get some draft picks at some point. Who knows, but, I guess it is what it is. Maybe they can get it going again. But I just think the Metro is so tough. Like even the Capitals haven't even been doing well lately. They've gone 4-5-1 in the last 10 and the Islanders are still below them now because that's just how bad they've been lately. It's just been a struggle. But real quick, before we move on to our third segment, going to do some, score updates. So, the Avalanche now scored. It's now 2-1 Boston. Miles Wood with his eighth goal of the season. Senators have scored two in quick succession against the Canadiens. Brady Tkachuk with his 19th and Tim Stützle with his eighth goal of the season. Lightning tie up the game 1-1 with the Wild. Victor Hedman with his eighth of the year. Stars Flyers is still scoreless with 4 minutes to go in the first. Capitals are up 1-0. TJ Oshie with his fifth of the season. And Blackhawks Sabres still scoreless, less than 2 minutes to go before the first intermission. There. And we're going to do some transaction reports. I'm going to start with the minor moves, just kind of, you know, rapid fire real quick. So the first one, the Blackhawks trading for Rym Pitlick and my pins, a conditional seventh round pick in 2026. That's a major move right there. That'll be a big deciding factor who we take with that pick there. The Canadians getting Philip Cederqvist from the Sabres. And of course, my favorite player, future considerations. Going back the other way, it's kind of like the player to be named later in baseball, yeah. Right? Where it's just memeable. Like I don't even know what that means, but it is what it is. Waiver wire, Tobias Bjornfot was claimed by the Vegas Golden Knights from the Kings. Zach Sanford claimed by the Blackhawks. Poor guy, man. He goes from the Coyotes to the Blackhawks. Just can't win either way. And then Gustav Lindstrom, you know, decent seventh defenseman, I think, claimed by the Ducks from the Canadians. But Brady, obviously there's one move we have to talk about. This move was, it was just strange in every possible way. And I personally enjoyed it a lot because it shows how chaotic it is behind the scenes for the Philadelphia Flyers. So Cutter Gauthier, who they drafted fifth overall, I want to say in 2022. It was either 21 or 22. But you know, one of their top prospects, they couldn't sign this guy. He didn't want to sign with the Flyers, so they had to trade him. They traded him to Anaheim for Jamie Drysdale and a 2025 second. Now, I do just want to say, I think Jamie Drysdale's a really good young defenseman when healthy. He's still only 21. He's only played 18 games the last two seasons. He got shut down from the shoulder surgery last season. And then there was the contract dispute with Anaheim this season that they eventually resolved, but it took, you know, a good bit of time. He's only played 10 games this season, but when he was healthy in 2021, I thought he was really good. He scored around 30 points, I think. He was only 19 years old. I think he's got a lot of promise. So if he can get back playing games consistently, I do think that's a good piece. Added in a second rounder as well. But I want to mainly focus on Cutter Gauthier on this one, Brady. So apparently this is what I've heard. This is what I've read. And this is why Cutter Gauthier is now one of my favorite players, and I'm probably going to get one of his jerseys at some point if I can. Supposedly, the story is that he was a childhood Pens fan and that he was essentially ticked off when he got drafted by the Flyers. He initially refused to sign with them right after they drafted him. So the Flyers kind of waited it out. They were thinking, okay, maybe he'll change his mind. Maybe he will sign. Nope. This guy said, I'm never signing with you guys. I want out of this team. I'm never signing with you under any circumstances. And they had to trade him. So, you know, that's very interesting. You know, Brady, what were your thoughts when you saw the story and, you know, all the hubbub surrounding it, and, you know, just general thoughts on this trade?
Yeah, this, what a crazy situation. I mean, I saw clips from him from draft night, and of course he just got drafted. So he was saying nice things about the organization, but he also was an animal in the World Juniors for, Team USA. Helping lead them to the gold. But yeah, he has the potential to be a great player, I guess, now for the Ducks. And Jamie Drysdale, I agree with you about the whole when he was with the Ducks, you know, he's still very young, and I thought he did pretty good. And I mean, I guess the Flyers are good. So mm-hmm. I think he could fit in nicely there on the back end too. But yeah, and there was a lot of, like, not even just that, like, yeah, I'm sure you probably saw John Tortorella like going off on the reporters about their reports, which isn't surprising, but I thought that was funny. And then there was that whole thing with like Kevin Hayes too, like trying to get him out of there or something. I'm sure you love to see the turmoil, I guess, despite the on ice product right now, but yeah, mm-hmm. a whole crazy situation. I guess I'd feel the same way if I was a player and I got drafted by the Rangers, but just a wild situation. I can't really put it any other way. I mean, you kind of see this once in a while. It's probably not the same thing, but of course I always think about when Eli Manning was drafted by the Chargers and traded to the Giants. But yeah, the fact that it kind of like took so long too, like he almost seemed unsure of it, but it almost feels like maybe in the back of his mind he knew all along, and then things just really kind of came to a head. And I saw like Keith Jones too. Everyone on the Flyers organization, they were very like blunt about like, you don't want to be a Flyer, get out of here. Like we don't want you, basically. And yeah, mm-hmm. it doesn't look good really for the Flyers, I guess, though, at the same time. And it does maybe give a little bit of a bad rap to Gauthier as well. People are thinking like, maybe like, okay, is this guy like a little, you know, I guess for lack of a better term, like a little full of himself, or like maybe like above the organization to some extent. But yeah, I mean, in the end, the trade overall, I think, was pretty good for both teams. The Flyers got a good young defenseman and the pick, and the Ducks got a young potential star, maybe even, to, of course, pair with Zegras and Terry and all those guys. But yeah, this was kind of out of nowhere, too. And this was like a week or so after the World Juniors ended, which, of course, Gauthier was busy with that, but just kind of an absolute whirlwind from out of nowhere, really, in the transaction world.
So first, trolling thoughts for me and then serious thoughts. You know, I still can't wait to see the Flyers eventually fall off. You know, I think Gauthier got out at the right time because I think it's only downhill from here. They're still second, but they got multiple teams on their heels. I still don't know who, you know, their go-to guy is on offense. You know, inconsistent defensively. They're eventually going to fall off a cliff, and they've already won enough games to where they won't even get a good draft pick from it. So there you go. Now, serious thoughts on this trade. I do think the Flyers did all they could here. I agree with you. You know, whether I think it's funny or not, if a guy just says he's never going to sign with you, he doesn't want to play for you, you got to get him out. And I think Keith Jones and Daniel Briere, they had the right mindset there to trade him for all they could. And I think getting something good back, because I think the Flyers really need another good offensive defenseman. You know, I think Sanheim is decent, but they're really looking for that, you know, power play general like they used to have with Shane Gostisbehere for years there, who's now in Detroit, kind of been bouncing around the league ever since he left the Flyers. You know, like you said, Drysdale's 21. When he has been healthy, I think he's looked really promising. And I think for the Ducks side of it, I think they were more willing to get rid of Drysdale because, you know, first of all, missed a lot of time, only 18 games played the last two seasons. They had the contract dispute as well. So, you know, you can mention, you know, relationship between Gauthier and the Flyers wasn't good. I doubt it was really good between Drysdale and the Ducks either. And also, I think, you know, something that a lot of people might not mention is the fact, you know, the Ducks have pretty decent defensive prospects. They drafted a guy in the second round, I want to say the year before last or last year. I can't remember for sure. But, you know, 2022 first-round pick, they got Pavel Mentyukov, who's a Russian defenseman. You know, he's a pretty decent defensive prospect. So I guess they were more willing to trade Drysdale than they probably would have been before after, you know, adding. And if you can get a guy, Cutter Gauthier, who – I was a little surprised he went fifth. I thought he was a really good prospect, don't get me wrong. But I was a little surprised he did go that high. But, you know, you add him to prospects. You know, you mentioned Zegras, I think, is really good. Mason McTavish is another guy. I really like Leo Carlson as well, who they drafted. Second overall? That sounds right. Because it was people like, oh, why didn't they take Fantilli? Instead, they took Carlson. But, you know, I think it's a good – it's tough to pick a winner right now because these two guys are so young and these, you know, are two guys for the future. Right now, I'd say it's pretty even. I think both teams traded guys that probably didn't really want to be on their teams, and they got back good returns. You know, it was a bit of a hubbub, very good publicity, very entertaining to watch. But objectively speaking, trade-wise, I think it was actually pretty good for both teams. Anaheim is probably going to get, you know, another solid lottery pick in there as well because their team is not very good again. And the Flyers are just kind of hoping maybe Drysdale can be the guy to help them get that final push for the playoffs as the season goes along. Real quick before we get to our teams of the week and wrap it up here for the night, more score updates. The Bruins are now up 3-1. First intermission, Jake DeBrusque with his 10th goal of the season. Canadians are on the board. It's now 2-1 Senators. Cole Caulfield, who I know you're about to talk about in a little bit, 15th goal of the season for him. Flyers, speaking of the devil, they're up 1-0 now. Scott Walker with his 5th goal of the season. That is also at intermission. All these games are at intermission, I believe. Actually, the Sens game has 1 minute left. And then the Blues have tied up the game with the Capitals. It's now 1-1. Walker with his 2nd goal of the season, and Blackhawks Sabres is scoreless at first intermission. So now let's get to our teams of the week here. This one was really tough. There's a lot of differentiation between our teams. I'm still waiting to see, you know, there's never been a time, I don't think all last season and into this season, to where me and my co-host have had completely different teams of the week, but this one was really close. So, you know, I'll start with you on this one, Brady. Let me go ahead and remove this real quick here. So talk about Sam Reinhart earlier. He makes your team of the week. Dylan Larkin as well. Claude Giroux was a really good choice, I thought. And then Samuel Girard and Adam Fox is your defenseman. Jeremy Swayman, Boston's number one goalie. I went ahead and said it as your goalie spot. And then honorable mentions, Cole Caulfield, Sean Durzi, and my guy, the Flower, Marc-Andre Fleury. rounding out the honorable mention. So, Brady, take it away. Explain your choices for Team of the Week this week.
Yeah, and like you said, it was so hard. There were maybe even a few players that probably could have been there that maybe neither of us had. Yes. I wanted to maybe give some other guys the spotlight as well who also were up there. But, yeah, so I guess we'll start off with Dylan Larkin. I was watching the Florida-Detroit game last night on TNT as well and kind of watching the way he played. He had the overtime winner last night. Overall, he had 4 goals and 2 assists. Like I said, the game winner, 2 of those on the power play, including that one. He played decently defensively as well. He had 2 blocks, but overall, a great week at the faceoff dot two. 43 faceoffs won, 58%, so that pretty good there. Detroit team too, that, you know, he's the captain of the team. They're kind of surging right now in the right direction. And I think he definitely had a good week there, leading them up in the ranks of the Atlantic. And moving on now to another guy, his opponent last night, who's been absolutely on fire, as we mentioned, Sam Reinhart. This week he had 4 goals and 1 assist, but overall he has goals in 8 straight games, which is wild. And two of those are on the power play. 2 of those, including one last night, was shorthanded too. So he's doing it every which way possible. One of those last week, I might have been the game against the Kings. I'm not 100% sure though. He did have an OT winner. Pretty good at the faceoff dot, 76% too. Doesn't take as many per se as Larkin. Only 16 faceoffs won, but he only lost 5 of them too. Just 1 hit and 1 block as well, but the Panthers are surging. So I obviously don't watch all their games, but I can imagine he does a pretty good job with the full 200 feet offensively and defensively, but he was just lighting up the score sheet. So that was really a no-brainer for me. Claude Giroux, Ottawa not doing too hot this year. As I mentioned, I feel like a lot of people maybe even had them sneaking into the playoffs. I wasn't too sure about that, but Claude Giroux, of course, he's getting up there in age, and of course he kind of haunted us a little bit when he was with the Flyers, but he's still doing pretty well up there despite all the struggles in Ottawa. He did have 3 goals and 3 assists this week, 2 hits, and 72% at the faceoff dot, so just another good week for him. Of course, Ottawa struggling a little bit there towards the bottom of the standings. Actually, they're quite literally now at the bottom of the East, 30 points. So it's been rough. And they have some good players like, of course, Giroux and Tkachuk, Batherson, those guys. So it's a little surprising maybe that they're that low. But they really just had a bunch of issues every which way. And it's been tough for them. But I figured I'd shout out Claude Giroux because, of course, he's getting up there in age now, but he's still finding ways to, despite being on a pretty bad team. So that rounds out kind of my forwards. And then defenseman, I decided to go with Sam Girard. He didn't score at all this week, at least goals, but he had 5 assists, which I thought was pretty impressive. 4 of those even strength. He had 1 on the power play. Averaging 1 point per game throughout, only took 2 shots too, but did have all those assists and 12 shot blocks throughout the week. I thought was pretty impressive, along with 6 hits. And of course, the Avalanche are a team right towards the top of the division again. And he plays a pretty big role back there. Of course, everyone talks about Makar and Taze, and rightfully so. But I feel like some of the other guys, especially Sam Girard, might not get quite as much publicity, but I figured I'd give him a shout out for a pretty good week. And then, excuse me one second.
You're good, dude. Get that hydration.
Yeah. Okay. So my other defenseman, I really didn't want to pick him, but I had to. He had a great week. Of course, Adam Fox. He's been lighting it up the last few years, really since he's been in the league throughout. But this week, 3 goals, 2 assists. I know he had 2 of those goals against Washington. They did end up losing that game. But the Rangers, who maybe have fallen back down to earth a little bit, they are still leading the Metro, though, although somehow the Flyers are kind of getting on their heels. Who would have thought? But Overall, a great week for Fox. 2 hits, 6 blocks along with that, 1 point per game. 9 shots overall, a 33.3 shooting percentage, which isn't necessarily terrible for a defenseman. And just overall, the Rangers, who, like I said, maybe struggling slightly. Of course, they did have that losing streak kind of at the beginning of the week. They're seemingly finding their game back a little bit, and he's definitely been kind of one of their main catalysts for that. So I figured he would fit well for the other defensemen. And then I know you said the Bruins' number one goalie, Jeremy Swayman. I mean, both of them have had great seasons, but Swayman, especially as of late, has been phenomenal. He played in 3 games this week, .937 save percentage, 165 goals allowed, 2-0-1 overall in the week. He faced 79 shots. I should mention as well, one of those was a shutout. He saved 74 of them, so he only allowed 5 goals throughout the week. And this Bruins team, I mean, some people, especially going into last season, thought they might fall off a little bit. We all know the regular season they had last year. And this year, it might not be quite the same as that, but it's been another impressive season. And Swayman, I feel like he might be starting to emerge as maybe their number one goalie. But I think he's kind of been phenomenal. And I feel like because Ullmark got the Vezina last year, Swayman was kind of flying a little bit under the radar. But he's been great for them, too.
Yeah, I completely agree with you, man. I think, I mean, like you said, you know, I was joking a little bit, but I think he's been slightly better this season than Ullmark, but they've been phenomenal. And, you know, with Ullmark winning the Vezina last season, I don't think a lot of people realized how good Swayman was coming in. You know, their stats were actually fairly similar. It's just that Ullmark played way more games, and he did have a slight edge statistically as well. But, you know, game 7 of the playoffs, wasn't it, that they made the big call to put in Jeremy Swayman. I wouldn't necessarily say he was the reason they lost the game. I mean, it was a tight game, and, you know, they couldn't hold on in the end. But I do think he's really talented. He's obviously younger than Ullmark as well. Like all your other choices, like I said, I love Sam Reinhart, so I'm always happy to see him on these lists. Adam Fox had a really good week. I love Sam Girard as well. I completely agree with you. I think he's a very underrated defenseman just because of how stacked that team is. But, you know, he's just really – really solid guy, you know, kind of just, you know, does the dirty work, flies a bit under the radar. And, you know, obviously Giroux and Larkin are good players as well. So, you know, really solid list. Now mine, like I said, mine is different, but as you alluded to, there were a lot of really good candidates this week. This was really tough for me. I'm going to go ahead and put mine up. So most of it is different, but I'll start with the only guy that's the same, Adam Fox. He was probably one of my easier choices. 5 points on the week, which I think was tied for the lead for defensemen for the past week. He had 3 goals, which led all defensemen for the week. Obviously, added 2 assists. He was a +1. All of his goals were at even strength. And, you know, I know he's a guy that, you know, we think is typically more of an offensive guy. But he does have that defensive side as well that I think is a little bit underrated, flies a bit under the radar. And he added 2 hits and 6 block shots as well. Beside him, Noah Dobson. Now, I know it's kind of funny, right, that, you know, we mentioned how terrible the Islanders have been. I do actually have 2 Islanders on, but I think these guys have actually done pretty good considering how bad the rest of their team has been. Noah Dobson was even for the week, which, you know, may not seem like much, but considering how bad the Islanders have been lately, I was actually stunned to see that. I thought he would have been a minus, definitely, but, you know, he has 5 points in 4 games over the past week, all assists. You know, despite having a rough team, rough week with his team, did average over 25 minutes average time on ice. He also had a game-winning assist. So the very last game they won, Brady, against those Leafs, and, you know, he did have the assist on the game-winning goal. And then 12 block shots, which tied for the weekly lead for defensemen and probably overall since Howie Dowd, any forward, got that many. So he had a pretty solid week on a team that was struggling. And then Sorokin, I know we mentioned a little bit earlier, this one was tough for me. I definitely think they were probably, you know, if you're just looking at it statistically, there were better choices. But the reason I gave it to Sorokin actually is I thought he did pretty good in a week where he was under hellfire pretty much. I mean, a .920 save percentage, despite getting peppered with shots. Here's some terrible stats for you, Brady. The last 4 weeks for Sorokin, he's had 137 shots against, which is an average of almost 35 a game, And he had 126 saves. So, you know, almost averaging 32 saves per game. You know, he was the only goalie over the past week. He played four games as well. And as we mentioned earlier, you know, he's had some bad luck, like that goal against Winnipeg where his skate blade came off. Neil Pionk scores on an empty net because he couldn't even get up. You know, if you add that as a save, I think his save percentage went up to like 927. So I think he had a really good week. But the main reason I gave an edge over guys who probably did have better statistics was he did all of that with basically no help in front of him. I mean, it was just, you know, they were under siege pretty much, and he was kind of standing on their head, keeping them in games where they probably could have gotten blown out if he was not doing what he did. So I was impressed with him. Forwards-wise, Kucherov was the easiest choice for me here. I mean, you know, this guy's been incredible all season. He's still tied for the league lead in points because Nathan MacKinnon went on an absolute tear. But 5 points for the week, all assists. But here's the main reason he was my easiest choice this week, Brady. 5 points in only two games played. A lot of other ones had like 5 points in three games played, but as soon as I saw he did that in only two games, I was like, yeah, he's got to be on the list. Also, both of those games, Brady, he had game-winning assists. So, you know, directly contributing to wins is something that I always like, you know, to give a decent amount of weight to. And then, you know, he did a bit of everything. Two of his points were even strength and three on the power play. So doing well 5-on-5 and on special teams as well. The way this guy's going, if he keeps it up, I mean, his team hasn't been very good, but he could still potentially win the Hart with how he's been going. He's been absolutely incredible this season. And then Sidney Crosby. And no, this was not a biased choice because Sidney Crosby has been incredible this season, Brady. He could potentially have one of the most underrated 50-goal seasons that we've ever seen. He's probably going to get a – unless he gets injured, he's probably going to set a career high in goals as well, or at least be close to his career high is 51. I think he can get around there. He's still got about half the season to go. But over the past week, he had 5 points. He had 4 goals, which was tied for the league lead for all players on the week with Yegor Sharangovich, funnily enough. Plus 5, tied for leading all forwards for the week as well. All points at even strength. And you know what? You know, people like to say he's not very physical. He, you know, he's a bit of a wimp. He did add 6 hits and 1 block shot this week. And he was good on the faceoff dot as well. 44 faceoffs won was good for 4th in the league for all centers over the past week. Won 54.3% of his faceoffs. Doing a little bit of everything. Heart and soul of the Pittsburgh Penguins. Main reason this team is starting to get on the run. This guy can still play, man. Still a really good player. Still one of the best, in my opinion. He may not be near the top of the points leaders charts or goal scoring charts anymore. But if you want to talk most important players to their teams right now, Sidney Crosby is still near the top of the list, definitely. And then last, but certainly not least, Mikko Rantanen was ridiculous this week. 4 games played, he had 7 points, which led all players for the week. 3 goals and 4 assists. He was a +3 as well. All of his goals were at even strength and, you know, had added 2 game-winning assists as well. 16.7% shooting percentage, added 3 hits and blocked shots. And, you know, for a guy that's a winger, apparently he played a good bit of center this week because he actually won 15 of 28 faceoffs, which is definitely not a statistic I typically consider when, you know, putting wingers on these lists. But I saw that and I was like, you know, he's doing a bit of everything, I guess. So really impressed with him. But, yeah, that was our team of the week. A lot of variation. Like I said, it was tough this week, man. Even the – oh, by the way, honorable mentions were hang on, I got him here. Claude Giroux, Sam Girard, and Peter Mrazek. I thought he had a really good week on a team that is not good at all in the Chicago Blackhawks. But, yeah, those were our teams of the week. Really liked the variation there. It was a really tough week. There are a lot of really good players that didn't even make honorable mentions. I mean, it was probably one of the toughest weeks I've ever had doing team of the week, which is saying something because there's a lot of weeks where it's pretty tough to only pick 6 players out of the whole league. But I think all our choices were pretty reasonable. Maybe I was a bit more generous to your Islanders than I should have been, but you know, they might not win a lot of games, but they do have some good players at least. So
yeah, I was looking at that kind of like last night or so when I was doing it, and I was like, how are these guys so high up like compared to some of the other guys with some of these statistics? And then I guess thinking back at it, it kind of made sense. But I guess when you're losing a majority of your games, it doesn't really feel like it. But yeah, Sorokin, especially with Varlamov hurt, hopefully he's coming back soon. But they had to call up Ken Appleby, so Sorokin's played pretty much every game. they almost got a little lucky when they were getting blown out by Minnesota. They were able to pull them and play Applebeat for the rest of that game so they could play Ilya the next night against Winnipeg. But, of course, he got unlucky there too. So, but, yeah, I guess it didn't really feel like they should have been in there. But once we were kind of going over it, I guess it made sense.
Yeah. Of course, it does take more than two guys to win games, unfortunately, for them. But, yeah, those guys are animals. I do really like them. Obviously, I'm not a big Islanders fan because they have liked any of my team seasons the past few years. But I do really like both those players. And, I mean, no Dobson. I mean, his first name is the name of legends. Like, come on, man. But, that's going to do it for Puck Around this week. Pretty good show, a bit shorter than usual. I do have a meeting to go to right after this, so we will have to wrap it up pretty quickly. Brady, anything you want to kind of say here before we get off the night?
Not much other than Islanders, please get back into it here. We still got, I mean, I guess I kind of have the Knicks, but we'll see with them. And I'm not looking forward to the Mets. So please at least make things interesting. Maybe make the playoffs. At least make it somewhat enjoyable. Either way, we're heading into the All-Star break here within the next few weeks. Always a fun time of the season. And then moving forward, stadium series, trade deadline, all that, kind of the final push towards the playoffs. So definitely an exciting time ahead.
Hey, man, honestly, the only way it could be worse for you if you were a Jets fan instead of a Giants fan. That's the only way I think you'd be.
Right now, it's not much better. I guess in the grand scheme of things, it's better, but
you at least got the good memories, right? You got the good memories. They don't have that unless they have the Super Bowl III video on VHS or whatever. But it is what it is. But, that's going to do it for us tonight. Really good show. We'll be back 2 weeks from now, so early February, to see how things are stacking up, see if any trades start happening, because this is around the time, Brady, where we're seeing like trades like the Tarasenko trade, the Kane trade. Stuff like that last season was kind of starting to get going around late January, early February. So we'll see what happens there. But until then, from myself, Noah Dog Dibler, and my co-host, Brady Campbell, this has been another episode of Pucking Around here on the Reby and Preby Sports Network. Until we see you next time, stay safe from this cold weather. Enjoy your hockey, unless you're a Flyers fan, and keep pucking around.